to go to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any belonging to the way, both men and women, that he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. And as he was traveling, it happened that he was approaching Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him, and he fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And he said, "Who are you, Lord?" And he said, "I'm Jesus, whom you're persecuting. But get up and enter the city, and it will be told to you what you must do." And the men who traveled with him stood speechless, hearing the voice, but seeing no one. Saul got up from the ground, and though his eyes were open, he could see nothing. And leading him by the hand, they brought him into Damascus. And he was 3 days without sight, neither did he eat or drink. Now there was a disciple at Damascus named Ananias, and the Lord said to him in a vision, "Ananias?" And he said, "Here I am, Lord." He says, and the Lord said to him, "Get up and go to the street called Straight and inquire at the house of Judas for a man from Tarsus named Saul, for he is praying, and he has seen in a vision a man named Ananias come in and lay his hands on him so that he might regain his sight." And Ananias answered, "Lord, I've heard from many about this man, how much harm he did to your saints at Jerusalem. And he said, and here he has authority from the chief priest to bind all who call on your name. But the Lord said to him, 'Go, for he is a chosen instrument of mine to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the sons of Israel. For I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake.' So Ananias departed and entered the house, and after laying his hands on him, he said, 'Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road by which you were coming, has sent me that you may regain your sight and be filled with the Holy Spirit.' And immediately there fell from his eyes something like scales, and he regained his sight, and he got up and was baptized, and he took food and was strengthened." Okay, so the story about this is a sense in which the same story that we've been seeing of men who become king, who they are somebody or nobody, that they do some things and they gain position, and there's a number of things that go on along those lines, and they either follow God or they do not follow God. And in this particular case, we have Saul, who is a primo Jew. He's been taught by the best in the land, Gamaliel. He's got to have some sort of political clout in the fact that he was able to go in to the leaders of the country and ask for what he will and receive it. He had to have reputation already. He had to have so many things. And I'm going to tell you, as the young man that he was, he's probably full of a good bit of pride that I am who I need to be, and I am all that God would have me be because I stand for God. And then he gets on the road to Damascus when he finds out that none of what he thinks about himself is really all that right. You with all your learning, you with all your commitment of conscience, with all your ability, all the things that you would do, you have everything in your hands, okay, to be that before men, but not before me, because you didn't even recognize your own Messiah. And if you don't believe that, why don't you just go without sight for a few days? And I mean, I think of me and my hard-headedness as a young man, and this is overwhelming to me to think that you would go through that to have a point made that now is undeniable about what is so and what is not so, and that whatever I've thought in the past is not accurate. That I have missed it somewhere, or those that taught me have, or something has gone wrong because he's right. I didn't know my own Messiah. But now I do. And we could go on all those things about what does he think for 3 days, and I really want to go there in a certain way, but that's really not the point of the lesson today. First thing is that God became personal to Saul at that moment. God is no longer a subject that we discuss. He's not out there somewhere. He's not everywhere and nowhere and all those kinds of things that people do, and that I don't identify with him. He became highly identifiable this minute. Okay? And so to him, Jesus was an imposter, but now he has become God. The one that I would show no respect to, I now give all respect to. That is a tremendous change. He is also told that you're now going to go to the Gentiles. So I want you to go back when you were baptized and some of the things that had happened. And if you, and the first thing that was going to be a major change between who you were before you were baptized and the thing that you are now going to be required to do after you're baptized, I'd like you to go to one of those points and understand, did you question it at all? Did you question whether you should or shouldn't or any of those things? Or did you accept completely that whatever God says I must do, I will do? Really want you to think about that. And the things that might embarrass you before men, would you do those things for the sake of God? Would you speak when you would never speak? Would you stand up when you wouldn't stand? What is it that you would do? You see, that all goals have vanished to be replaced by a mission is what ended up happening with Saul. And we understand that and all those things. So, it is at that point that I come to the 3 days of which I've spent a lot of time thinking about what would you think about for the next 3 days after this has happened to you and that you knew immediately that you've done wrong, that your thinking is wrong, your attitude is wrong, your understanding is wrong, and now I'm over here and I've got something that's going to be given to me to do and it has to do with the Gentiles. I might understand that, but I don't know what that's going to be and I don't know how big that's going to be, how long that's going to last, or any other thing. Would you be afraid? You could be. And so this is where there's a statement that was made by Abraham Lincoln. After listening to the pleas of the mother of a soldier who had been sentenced to hang for treason, she begged the president to grant a pardon to her son. And Lincoln agreed. Yet, he's reported to have left the lady with the following words. Still, I wish we could teach him a lesson. I wish we could give him just a little bit of hanging. He doesn't want to kill the man, but he wants him to learn the lesson. And we understand where the title of the lesson then comes from. And so when I go back and then I look at the idea of Paul on the road to Damascus, and he's marching down so confidently and all the things that he's going to do, the light shines on him, he hears what's been said, he is told whatever, he's struck blind, all the things that go on, and now here I am, I think he got just a little bit of hanging. Because he's not dead. But his life has certainly changed. Everything has changed. And so, I take it and I ask you the question, if it were you that was on that road, and instead of Saul, Saul, it's Daryl, Daryl, why are you persecuting me? But Lord, I'm not. That we need to be considering some things. And I'm asking, do we need a little bit of hanging? Because the distinctiveness of being a Christian is very, very real. I want us to understand that. And that distinction is not from going out and tooting our horns or putting up road signs that say what we believe and how it is and that we this or we that or any other kind of thing. This is about a lifestyle that says you declare the one who has made you his child. And I'm asking you how you do that. How do you do that? How should you do that? What are the ways that we would do it? And so there is, I want to make a point here. There's a movie that was out a good while ago called If You Could See What I Hear. And it is about a blind man. The blind man is a good-looking man in college. He is athletic in build. He is a dazzling smile, blah, 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 and all those kinds of things. But he is completely blind and cannot see. He has a best friend that will ride a bicycle. He's got a rope on it. He runs behind the bicycle. And his friend will run him into a tree every now and then or run him over a bench and play with him somewhat. But he takes all that into consideration, and he still has this very upbeat attitude. He doesn't act blind. There's nothing about him that acts blind. He plays golf. Has to have his friend. He'll put the tee there, set his club behind the ball. And he says, you need to go straight out and so many yards, and you've got this club in your hand. And he would swing, and he's a scratch golfer blind. You go, never heard of such. At one point, he's inebriated and asked to drive a car. His same buddy that rides the bicycle puts him behind the wheel and tells him where to go, and he drives the car blind. And then they're caught by a policeman and says, I need to see your driver's license. I don't have one. Says, did you leave it at home? No, sir, I just don't have one. I'm blind. And he goes to jail over it and some things that way. And it's funny. I mean, he is in this juxtaposition. He's not acting like a blind man. He is acting like regular college guy would be, and all those kinds of things. Well, eventually he goes through some relationships, and he finds a young lady that he's going to marry, and he's there with her. He's met the family a number of times. They're having a get-together like we've just had. Whether it's for a holiday or whatever it is, they've come home. Everybody's there. She has a sister that's got a small child. The child is a couple of years old, something like that. And they have let her play in the pool, and totally by accident, they leave her and a blind man by the pool. And the young lady, the toddler, falls into the pool. He hears the splash, and then he doesn't hear anything else. He tries to call somebody, they don't hear. He dives into the pool. He listens for bubbles. And when he hears some bubbles, he swims to the bubbles, finds the girl, saves her life, all is well. And so if you can imagine, what would that be? The comment after the little girl is saved, of course all the attention goes to the little girl, you okay, the things that way, everybody. And when his fiance comes to him, he says, I'm blind. I'm blind. You think he didn't know he was blind? If he could have seen, he would have gone straight to her, would have been no problem. But she almost drowned because he's blind, and now he realizes being blind is no joke. Are you blind? Have we been rocking along in our little world saying we're what we ought to be, and that we're, everything is good, and that I understand, and all the good things that would happen that way, and that I have the same mindset that Saul had in some form, thinking that all is good and all is right and I'm the Christian I should be and all the things that would be that way, when in reality I'm a blind man? I want to warn you, because there's a side of Satan that concerns me, okay? The place that we would never expect to get a warning from. Your own family. Do you know they can lead you the wrong way? They can. Whatever their bad habits are, whatever they've excused in the past, whatever has been done before, we can have that kind of stuff. Or the same sort of thing. Just the familiarity of the way we do things, and that because we do them that way, that they begin to own us because we don't think about things anymore, because we don't consider what God really meant by what He said. We can do those. They're the things that we do often, all to the point that we are comfortable with, like being near the edge of a swimming pool where I don't even see the danger anymore. How many children run along the edge of a swimming pool, especially in the warm weather, every day? A bunch. And we keep our eyes on them, but let me make it very, very clear. It doesn't take but a little bit of time for the worst accident ever to happen. But it's something that's familiar, and so we don't see it as a danger. And because we don't see the danger, we leave ourselves open. And so then we have this passage that is told to us, that be so of sober spirit and be on the alert, because your adversary, the devil, prowls like a roaring lion, seeking who he may devour. And do you think he's after the people he already owns? I tell you, he's not. He's after you. He's after the one that would stand for God. He's after the one that says no to what he says, who has already evaluated that I want to serve the living God. I do not want to serve the devil. I am not going to serve myself. I'm going to serve over here. And so I want you then, instead of putting the temptation that he may put in front of you at the beginning, the thing that would have enticed you to say a lie or something that would cause you to do the thing you shouldn't do, instead of putting that in front of you anymore, he's going to put something else. He's going to put familiarity. All is well. All is well. All is well. That sense of safety. My home is a refuge, and that we're what we ought to be, and because we are what we ought to be. See, the devil can come at you one way by just leaving you alone and let you live pridefully, thinking that you're in control. Okay, when in reality, you're forgetting that you're lost without God. Now, what I want you to understand that is I'm not taking that from my own opinion. I'm taking that from the Old Testament that we've just been studying, when the everyday man does whatever the king says do, because the king is the king, and that if he's a good king, I'll do that, and if he's a bad king, I'll do that, and that I'll do whatever I want in between, or I'll get rid of some things, but I won't get rid of all things. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I'm still just me. And I'm not serving God. I'm not giving myself to him and the things that he really wanted from me. And so, do you understand what would happen if we take this and we just make the Church of Christ and worship becomes commonplace? I don't come here and I'm not uplifted. I'm putting in my time. My friends are here, and I enjoy what we talk about before and after and some of those kinds of things, and that the sermons and the lessons and the song, they don't affect me anymore. Those kinds of things. That Bible study becomes optional, or that prayer is the sameness in it has become a habit rather than our talking to God. That your heart becomes infiltrated with the sameness until you think you are safely out of range of change. I don't have anything that I have to do because I'm doing just fine. So that Satan's not going to take your life. No. He's not going to replace your home. He's just going to paint it in drabness. Dull stuff. Too much of the same. He'll take your evening gowns and give you bathrobes and recliners. That he won't take your children. He'll just make you too busy to notice them and what they're doing. He'll whisper procrastination so that everything that you should do will be tomorrow. Do we need a little bit of hanging? You see, there's a place where while I would accuse no one of this, but I'm afraid. And I need to be afraid because I know who's after me. He's a roaring lion. And they don't come. Lions don't just walk up, "I'm coming over to eat you." They slip up on you to where you can't get away. And those are the things that we have to be very careful of. So that when Paul replaced Saul, I want to ask you the question, when did he become comfortable with what he has to do today? When 5 times I received 39 stripes. When I've been stoned, when I've been shipwrecked, when I've been the things that happened to him and how often they happened to him. And we look at all that goes on there, not to mention the mental stress of all the churches, how they're doing, are they going to stand, have I taught them well enough, all the good things that might go along that way, are they getting along, are they what they should be? There was just too much to do to be comfortable. And if we had to answer God's Spirit whispering in our ears at the end of the day as to where to go and who to speak to and what is left to be done and so forth, would you be comfortable? And what I mean is, are you going to go sit down in the recliner, or are we going to think about something that God needs? It could be inside your own family. It could be outside your family. It could be someone who is down the street that needs their soul saved. It could be a whole lot of things, couldn't it? Can we get comfortable? And so when I ask the question, if you had that close call where there's a toddler child, or maybe in this room, there are a good number of grandchildren. It was your grandchild. And they had that close call. What would you do? Would you become more vigilant? That close call teaches us something, doesn't it? I want to give you the idea that maybe we should take a picture of that since that thing. In this case, we're talking about a child falling into a pool. Maybe I should take that child, while they're still wet, take a picture of them and put it on my refrigerator so that I never forget that I have a job to do, that I cannot become complacent, that I cannot just sit down and be comfortable. There's a lot to think about, isn't there? Scares me how much needs to be done and how much can I get to in a day, and I just can't seem to get to enough. What about you? Can we not find a little more time somewhere in our day to give to God for the things that He needs? Can we not consider it my duty and my privilege at the same time? If you're not a Christian, we would ask that you would become one, that you would give God everything about you. And then you will have a life that is full, absolutely. And if we who have been that and made that decision a long time ago need to make a few changes, then let's make those changes today. If we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing?